Welcome back, everyone, to another week of The Damage Report, a show that is ostensibly normally about politics, but today will be about the pronunciation of words like pen, which we're disagreeing about.
We were disagreeing.
It's a pen.
I think pin and pen are pronounced the same, even though they're spelled differently.
Pin, pen.
Nobody says pen. Give me a pen.
I just did. I'm a person. Are you saying I'm not a person? Look at the dehumanizing going on in The Damage Report this week.
Hey, do you write with a pen?
Am I crazy?
Do you say that?
Okay, we're gonna do a poll. Right. I'm gonna figure this out.
We're getting to the important stuff here, okay?
She's here.
The world is on fire.
Anyway, Brooke's here as always. Lots to get to this show, other than pronunciations. Look, we've got updates on impeachment. Mm-hmm. We had to limit ourselves, because otherwise we could have done the whole week. So much happened over the weekend, but we do have a little bit on that. We're gonna be talking about a really fascinating investigation into a murder, just a little bit south of here, actually, with an author of a book, She's So Cold, Murder Accusations and the System That Devastated a Family. We've got the death of a witness in the Botham John shooting. We've got Trump versus Romney. We've got Trump versus Perry. We've got people shooting each other in Florida. It's a lot, okay?
It's a lot, yeah.
And we have a little bit of Anna Kasparian, actually. So if we can get to that, that's gonna be fun as well. So why don't we jump right into the news, starting with Donald Trump. If Donald Trump didn't like the first whistleblower, how do you think he's gonna like the set of whistleblowers coming out now? On Sunday morning, attorneys representing the original whistleblower confirmed the New York Times report from earlier in the weekend, telling ABC News they now represented a second intelligence official who had spoken to the inspector general. This whistleblower has, quote, more direct information about the events than the first whistleblower. So that was like the big news of the weekend. There is a second whistleblower. Mm-hmm. There's also the tax-related whistleblowers, but we're focusing here on Ukraine. But as we were just beginning to process the second whistleblower, we found out there might be more than even that. The attorneys representing the whistleblower who filed a complaint about President Trump's dealings with Ukraine said they are representing multiple whistleblowers in connection to the case. And so there's a little bit of like mixed signals here. I don't know exactly how many there are. There are two, there are potentially three or four or more, but we have at least two at this point.
So essentially, like, unlike your elected representatives in the GOP would like you to believe, more people somewhat directly involved in this are not okay with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Publicly, they're all cool with it. It's fine, like going down with the ship, whatever.
Yeah.
But a lot of people were not okay with this.
Yeah, yeah. And look, so we have an obligation to tell you about this so that you know that in terms of the whistleblowers, the people who initially had an issue with this, there are multiples. But what I want to stress when talking about this is that it doesn't matter at all. Even if the whistleblowers suddenly, like I said last week, if they were Thanos'd into dust, it wouldn't matter because the summary of the call that the White House put out already says all the bad stuff that the whistleblowers are saying. And even if we snapped and got rid of the memo, Trump went on TV and asked both Ukraine and China to look into the Bidens. So they keep attacking the whistleblowers, like how dare they imply Trump would do something. Wait, I'm getting word he's doing it on TV right now during Chopper Talk. No, never mind, we've got to turn to something else. He's doing it over and over and over. The initial complaints are interesting. I would love to hear what they have to say, but they are not necessary for this impeachment inquiry to go forward.
It's a good point.
I try. I try to make one good point a week.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever said that.
But I think you won't actually. So look, that's interesting too, but there's other elements to that I want to cover as well. So I've continued to try to fight back against this idea that Donald Trump secretly likes the idea of being impeached, which is a crazy idea that only loons would put forward, including Nancy Pelosi. Who used to say that?
I'm not gonna call Nancy Pelosi
a loon. I'm not saying she's a loon, but she believed a loonish theory that he wants to be impeached.
Yeah, it is completely opposite of any bit of his personality that he has publicly shown us.
Yeah.
Completely opposite.
And look, she is now pushing for the inquiry, so credit to Nancy Pelosi for eventually catching up to
where we were at a year ago. And also whether he wants to be impeached or not doesn't matter at all. Again,
yes.
Back to the bucket of things that don't matter. Whether he wants it or not, it doesn't matter, because whether or not he deserves to be impeached, it shouldn't have anything to do with whether he wants it, whether it brings him positivity or good attention, whether it hurts anyone politically. It's whether he broke the law. That's it.
Good point.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. There are 10 commandments to speaking about this inquiry.
Okay.
I don't have all 10, but I've got 3, I think.
Okay, let's go
1, it's simple. Don't get it twisted. This is a really simple thing to understand. 2, the whistleblower doesn't matter because he's doing it all publicly. And 3, this isn't about 2020. It's not about partisan politics. It's not about like, what effect will it have in one Senate race? It's about upholding your constitutional duty to stop the president from breaking the law.
Right.
So thank you for citing commandment 3. That's the important one. Eventually we'll get to the adultery and stuff like that, which also Trump has done. So he's broken all sorts of stuff. But anyway, so look, he doesn't want to be impeached. We showed you the video from back in 2014, a couple weeks ago,
right,
of him saying at the time when Republicans were like, Obama secretly wants to be impeached, Trump said that is a stupid thing to believe. And I've seen nothing that leads me to believe that he's changed his mind in the ensuing 5 years. But importantly, we do have a bit of updated information. In a phone call with House Republicans on Friday, this is just a few days ago, Trump articulated why he doesn't want this. Impeachment, Trump said, is, quote, a bad thing to have on your resume, according to a source on the call. 2 other sources on the call confirmed the substance of the comment, but one said they recalled Trump phrasing it as, quote, you don't want it, impeachment, on your resume. So whether it's bad on your resume or you don't want it on the resume, he doesn't want it. So I really hope that we can push past this idea that still, despite the flailing nature of his defense and the ridiculous appearances by people like Jim Jordan and Rudy Giuliani, and the constantly throwing people under the bus, which we'll get to later, that secretly he is leading us towards a tiger trap.
And it's ridiculous. The only reason that people even talk about that and even like bring it up as if it's an important point, it's to push this idea that we can't do things that he likes. That is not the battle here at all. People aren't making decisions based on trying to make him mad. People are trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes the right thing makes him happy.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it doesn't. It's completely opposite of what he wants, but it's not about whether or not you can get under his skin or hurt his feelings or do something that he doesn't want. That is absolutely absurd.
Yeah, and also, by the way, if you're trying to like gaze into the mind of Donald Trump and try to figure him out and do nothing that will theoretically make him happy, try to bear in mind that he's a narcissist and a pathological liar and a sociopath. Don't try to get too deep into his mind. You might not like what you find there. But anyway, there is a little bit more to this over the weekend that was interesting, and that is a former close associate of Donald Trump's who apparently thinks that Donald Trump, in his bid to not get impeached, might be willing to do what Cenk Uygur has been predicting for a long time, which is willingly, you know, walk that dusty trail and just leave office. So we're gonna jump ahead one graphic. So this is Barbara Rez, former VP of the Trump Organization. She says he had this notion that everything that happened that was bad was directed at him, like they were after him. People were after him. He makes it like not that they're after something he might have done, they're after him. Okay, and so now that they're after him, what will he do? He does a lot of things to save face. It would be very, very, very bad for him to be impeached. I don't know that he'll be found guilty, but I don't know that he wants to be impeached. I think that's what this panic is about. And my gut tells me he'll leave office, he'll resign or make some kind of deal, even depending on what comes out. I remain incredibly skeptical about that sort of thing. I think that as bad as being impeached would be, willingly stepping away from the presidency, I think for a guy as self-centered and as thin-skinned as him, I think that's just not an acceptable option. It would be too embarrassing for the rest of his life, I think. If he's worried about his legacy and that's what all of this bad for his resume thing is, stepping down before he even finished his first term, how could he possibly abide that?
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I don't think he.
I like the idea.
I don't see him ever getting to a point where he believes that he won't just win everything.
Exactly. And also, like I'm doing what I said not to do, trying to get into his head.
Yeah.
At the same time, it could be botched, which we've been saying from the very beginning. There's nothing that says that guarantees that this process is going to be done in a reliable way, in an effective or like an efficient way either. So this could take a long time. It could get too close to the election for him to step down, or it could just be bungled along the way. So get ready for those possibilities as well. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. Lots more to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Unfucking the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. the UNFDR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFDR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
When there is a tragic murder, one of the goals in the investigation that you want to get to, that you fight towards, sometimes against amazing odds, is getting someone to confess to the murder. But does a confession really mean that they actually did it, considering the pressure that sometimes is brought to bear, sometimes on incredibly young people? Well, we've got a great, fascinating case of this. And we're joined now by Donald McInnes, a defense attorney and author of She's So Cold, Murder, Accusations, and the System That Devastated a Family. Donald, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you here. This is a fascinating case. So tell us a little bit about the murder of Stephanie Crow.
Oh, it occurred late at night. The family was all in bed. The police said that the 14-year-old son, Michael, did it, Michael Crow. But there was other evidence that indicated that it was done by a vagrant who had mental issues. Mm-hmm. And she was brutally stabbed numerous times. It was a terrible scene.
Yeah, an absolute tragedy. And then there were several sort of layers of belief of who had actually done it. And so we had some confessions, some quasi-confessions. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, once they came to the conclusion that the home had not been broken into, which is a false assumption, they turned to Michael. First, actually, they turned to the father, Stephen. But Stephen was in such great grief over the loss of his daughter, they ruled him out. It shows you how subjective they were being. Mm-hmm. So they turned to Michael, who seemed to not be grieving as much as he should. And what followed was about 12 hours of interrogation over 2 days. Wow. In which they basically told him that there was a good Michael and there was a bad Michael. And the bad Michael killed his sister. And that was how they got him to write a letter to his dead sister, basically apologizing for the murder and her death.
And I believe it was, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a complicated case, but I believe that there was a friend that was sort of coerced into describing hypothetically, if you had done this, how would you have done it? And so the whole thing seems very different than what I think people not involved in this process think that confessions are. They think that, oh, the person did it, they confessed that they did it. But it looks like there are some fairly sophisticated manipulative techniques that the police can use.
Well, that's the shocking thing about this case and also the Central Park 5 rape and brutal beating of the young lady. The police assumed that Michael couldn't do it alone. So they then started looking around to his other friends. His closest friend was then brought into the interrogation, and that was Josh Treadway. And then they brought in my client, Aaron Hauser. But the sad thing about this is they interrogated Joshua Treadway over an extraordinary amount of time, about 14 hours. And they got him basically to admit that he was part of a conspiracy of the three boys to kill Stephanie.
Donald, Brooke here, I have a question, because I think we see in a lot of these cases that have been highly publicized involving children and potentially false confessions. You just brought up the Exonerated Five in Making a Murderer, that series. And here, How big of a problem is it that children are able to be interrogated without an attorney as long as their parent waives that right?
Oh, it's a shocking situation. If you take all of the people that are estimated to be in jail that gave a false confession, admitting that they killed the person or did the act, it is 63% of those people are juveniles. And they are there simply because of the false confession. The numbers are just staggering.
Do we know of any efforts either within police departments or, you know, perhaps from politicians to try to regulate the way that these interrogations are done, to force an attorney to be there, to limit the duration, or some of the techniques that you talk about in the book to not use these techniques that have been shown to be particularly effective at manipulating young people?
Well, actually, there is Myrtle Beach Police Department has issued a manual on how to deal with juveniles. And in that manual, they try to explain to the police officers that these kids are subject to great manipulation. As a process, the police are trying to solve the problem. And the problem really is that there is a Reed technique of interrogation that is used by almost every police department in the United States. And this Reed technique of interrogation has a process towards a 9-step process that the police follow in order to get a confession.
And I'm curious now, unfortunately, it'll probably have to be our last question. Because of the sort of complicated back and forth legally in terms of this particular case, what's the current status? Was there ever anything conclusive found? Where are we now?
Well, what happened was that the mentally ill vagrant, was then tried, convicted, but the appellate court overturned his conviction because one witness was not allowed to come in and testify. During the second trial, that person, the vagrant, was acquitted. Also, too, an extraordinary event took place wherein the Superior Court of San Diego found the three boys factually innocent. That is different from being not guilty. And factually innocent meant that there wasn't any evidence that showed that these boys killed Stephanie Crow.
Wow, this is just about the most complicated case that I've seen. I think there's a lot that people can learn from your book, both about this case, which is fascinating in its own right, but also about the implications of the use of these interrogative techniques that you talk about. The book is She's So Cold, Murder, Accusations, and the System That Devastated a Family. Donald McInnes, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I want to take a short break here. When we come back, another case, perhaps another evasion of justice. We'll break that down after this. There was certainly a shock when Amber Guyger ended up actually getting sentenced to jail time in the shooting of Botham Jean. That was really shocking. But it wasn't the last shock in this case, because we just found out that Joshua Brown, a key witness in the trial, someone who lived across the hall from Botham Jean, has also now been found dead. And some elected representatives, including Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, are saying that we need to get to the bottom of this. There must be an investigation at what is, best case scenario, an incredibly suspicious timing for another person to be shot. So let me give you some of the details on this. Joshua Brown was killed, this is Friday, at his current home, the Atera Apartments, about 5 miles from his former complex where he, Geiger, and John all lived. Authorities have not said whether there's any connection between Brown's death and his testimony in the trial. Local police discovered Brown lying on the ground outside an apartment complex with multiple gunshot wounds on Friday night. Witnesses said they saw a white sedan fleeing the scene shortly after hearing gunshots. So, Brooke, we were talking about this before the show. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we don't want to jump to any conclusions.
For sure.
But Timing can look unsuspicious or suspicious, and this is tending more towards the second.
I never want to be a conspiracy theorist. I usually hate all things that could possibly even just be chopped down to a potential conspiracy. I hate it.
I agree.
This is weird, and I don't even think, you don't have to think that hard about it. This is bizarre that someone who the prosecution kind of described as one of the only people who was willing to come forward, that needs a conversation on its own. Because what does that mean? Who else was out there? What does that mean?
Well, and what potential information will we never know about?
Right. But yeah, in such an important case where the police weren't acting fairly. They weren't. There were things from the beginning, and her fellow officer started deleting text messages for whatever reasons she did. It was a weird situation. And someone who spoke out against her ends up dead right after the trial ends is scary and bizarre. It could also not be connected whatsoever. It also happened right after the,
Yeah, it's been a big year for interesting timing in deaths. That's all we're saying. We're not saying anything crazy.
Right.
We're not saying, for instance, that the same sort of police department that would try to hide the evidence and protect her from any sort of justice, probably expecting, considering every precedent we've seen, that it would work. Shockingly, she's gonna go to jail, at least for a little while, that there would be some sort of revenge. Not saying that. But it's not impossible to imagine. Anyway, that is the whole purpose of why you would have an investigation to try to find out. And that is what some politicians are pushing for. So I just want to cite just a couple to show you that this has reached the highest levels of US government. With AOC tweeting, just when we caught a glimpse of justice for Botham Jean, much of it feels stolen back with the murder of Joshua Brown, a key witness in this case. My heart breaks for his family and for everyone touched by this tragedy. We must get to the bottom of this injustice. We also had Kamala Harris tweeting out, Joshua Brown's selflessness and courage brought some justice for his neighbor. We grieve again learning of Joshua's murder. I pray for his family, his community, and all those impacted by this tragedy. We demand answers. And just really fast, because I know what the internet is like, we can have an issue with Kamala Harris's past involvement in things like this. But this is right. I'm just trying to head it off.
I mean, it is
she's
just
right
absurd.
In this case. And I think Julian Castro also tweeted about this case. I didn't see any others. It's possible that they did. If they did, I'm not trying to leave them out. I'm not MSNBC. Yeah. These are the ones that I saw this morning.
To be fair, she's right in a lot of instances. And
just this one.
Collectively, almost the entire United States has been cheering her on, her in every time any congressional hearing exists. So like the idea that now that she's running for president, it's like we have to remind you that she's good at her job is absurd. And every single politician has done something that somebody is not going to like. And I think that
my favorite politician's never done anything
that
wrong.
That is not true. In this instance, I just don't want to be, you know, like of course that's the right thing to say, you know, like.
Yeah, well and the terrible thing about cases like this and Epstein as well, is that there is no way to raise any questions without seeming like a conspiracy theorist. You just can't. But so what is the alternative? Silence?
No,
that means that
I'm glad that you're talking about it on your show, I think.
Well, it's obviously important. We have to. And so if people do that, if in their fear of seeming weird or extreme or whatever, they just don't talk about this, then either it was a regular shooting, which is a tragedy of its own and definitely has to be solved, or it could be something darker. And whichever it is, obviously it's incredibly serious. And so that's why I'm glad that it wasn't just like Amber Geiger goes to jail or is going to, there's a hug, and then we move on as a nation. We can deserve to spend some of our time making sure that there's not more injustice piled on top of what is still injustice.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're gonna take a break. We come back, multiple people being thrown under buses. It is a bumpy ride for DC buses recently. So we're gonna update you on all of those after this. It has been incredibly just demoralizing how few elected Republicans have been willing to speak out against Donald Trump, regardless of what he's done this whole time, but let alone now where he's facing serious impeachment inquiry. Why is it that they don't speak out? I got a case study for you, and it involves Mitt Romney, who did sort of speak out against Trump recently.
There's always that in there.
What's that?
Sort of.
Well, that's the thing.
That's the max that we can get from them.
Yeah, that is the max, and I think this might be an example of why. So what did Mitt Romney senator say. He said, when the only American citizen President Trump singles out for China's investigation is his political opponent in the midst of the Democratic nomination process, it strains credulity to suggest that it is anything other than politically motivated. That's the most Romney-esque tweet ever. He goes on to say, by all appearances, the president's brazen and unprecedented appeal to China and Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden is wrong and appalling. Now, he says it strains credulity, it's wrong and appalling, those three things. He does not say, and thus I support the impeachment of the president. So he's pushing against Trump, but only so far, not
right,
all the
because
way.
Because you know what the third tweet should have said? And I am here to apologize for the American people, because even my at times 65-78% support of this horrible, horrible man has helped create this monster.
Yeah. So look,
this is my
fault. I agree. Right. We'll speculate in a bit about what would have happened if he said that. But this is what he did say. And so, look, Donald Trump, obviously he doesn't agree with Mitt Romney, but he knows in the future he's gonna need Mitt Romney's help. So he's a bit diplomatic. He raises out a hand. Somebody please wake up Mitt Romney and tell him that my conversation with the Ukrainian president was a congenial and very appropriate one. And my statement on China pertained to corruption, not politics. If Mitt worked this hard on Obama, he could have won. Sadly, he choked. So
as soon as I saw that Mitt Romney tweets, I was like, Trump, it cannot wait to say you're just mad because you couldn't win, but I could.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, some form of that.
Waiting
you
for
knew
it
was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not all that's coming. Mitt Romney never knew how to win. He's a pompous ass who's been fighting me from the beginning, except when he begged me for my endorsement for a Senate run, I gave it to him. And when he begged me to be Secretary of State, I didn't give it to him. He is so bad for ours, all of them, reading, writing, arithmetic,
oh
all of them.
My
just
goodness.
Really bad for them. Goes on to say, and by the way,
this is so sad. This is the president of the United States.
You think those were sad?
This is so sad.
Wait for number three.
Okay.
Usually the sequel's bad, but the third jumps the shark. And in this case, they did. So I'm gonna read you a tweet from Trump about Mitt Romney that definitely happened. I'm hearing that the great people of Utah are considering their vote for their pompous senator, pompous is capitalized, Mitt Romney, to be a big mistake. I agree. He's a fool who is playing right into the hands of the do-nothing Democrats. Hashtag full caps impeach Mitt Romney.
It's like when he learns a new word, he tries to use it against you. Do you remember? This is what happened with collusion.
Mm-hmm. And last week, who taught him coup?
Right.
Some people are still working on it. Candace Owens said that
he
the Democrats
never
have launched
threatened
a coup
to impeach anybody, and now he wants to impeach Mitt Romney.
Mm-hmm. That's not how it works.
Get out of Utah, Mitt. Like,
you know what I love? You know what I love is Mitt Romney sends out his tweets criticizing Trump, and Trump is like, damn man, that is hard. I'm gonna start calling up people in Utah. Hey Joe, do you like your vote? Oh, you want him to impeach him? Well, that's I don't want you to be an outlier. I'm gonna call a couple thousand people and find out. That didn't
it's
happen.
Like when,
didn't
like,
talk to any
people
of them.
On Instagram say, and it's part of an ad, but when they say things like, many of you have been asking about my skincare, and they're like known for their hair. And so you're like, no, nobody has been asking about your skincare.
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to sell us? This is it. This is
he's
what he
trying
does.
To sell us something.
Many people have been calling me, telling me, no, that didn't happen.
I don't know anyone in Utah.
It's so weird.
Nobody knows anyone in Utah. I'm joking. If you're in Utah, I love you.
And then why are you only telling us once he says something mean to you?
Exactly. So it's an added layer of a little bit of cowardice.
Right.
So this is what Trump did after Romney didn't support impeachment, just says it was wrong and appalling.
Mm-hmm.
If Romney had come out in favor of impeachment, Donald Trump would have taken him to the top of some sort of like temple, ripped his spine out of his back and kicked him down the stairs. I have to presume, we don't know.
Is that a Game of Thrones scene?
It's something, I don't know. I'm gonna write about it later. It's gonna be in one of my novels. Here's the thing, why this is important. I don't really care about Mitt Romney. And Mitt Romney, he's very like flaky.
He's kind of the worst. Like,
he's the
stop.
Worst.
Like,
he occasionally will speak out, but what are you actually doing?
Right.
You have power. You don't just have a mouth and vocal cords. You have a position in government. You can
completely.
Do something. But we can learn a lot from this, because this is what will happen. This is the destiny of any elected Republican that even hints that they might be thinking about supporting impeachment against Donald Trump or the conviction later on if it got to the Senate. They will be nuked from orbit if that happens. And so this is one of the reasons why I'm not being too hard on Mitt Romney. I guess I have been, but not too much, because we need to incentivize them to do it, because there are already so many disincentives. There's very little reason, if you're a Republican, to come out in favor of, you know, the truth of the Constitution or whatever, because most of your base is really Trump's base, and he is going to do anything he can to get you to lose your reelection bid the next time it comes up. And that's a rough position to be in.
It's a rough position to be in.
So anyway, you know, hold strong, Mitt Romney, for the first time in your life. Anyway, let's turn to someone who is
back under the bus here.
Lined up under the bus next to Mitt Romney. Okay, let's turn to Rick Perry, actually, someone we don't often talk about on the show.
What great video. Wow.
I love the B-roll they found. Rick Perry, suddenly embroiled in the impeachment controversy. He's just running under the bus with an assist from Donald Trump. So why is Rick Perry involved in this? What does he have to
do? Why is Rick Perry involved in this administration? We've been asking that since the very beginning.
Rick Perry occasionally forgets that he's in the US government. But anyway, here is why it came up. Trump told House Republicans on Friday that he didn't really want to make the call to the Ukrainian president in the first place that has now sparked an impeachment inquiry. Quote, not a lot of people know this, but I didn't even want to make the call. The only reason I made the call was because Rick Perry asked me to. So Rick Perry dancing his way under the tires of a bus. He's gonna be the fall guy, I guess. I guess that's the plan today. The plan changed. That is just the best pot. Thank you, Sophie, for getting that. So look, speaking at a press conference, we want the response too. So that's what Trump says.
Right.
Speaking at a press conference in Lithuania, Perry said that he told Trump that it was in the best interest of the two nations, the US and Ukraine, to have discussions regarding energy issues. Perry said, absolutely. I asked the president multiple times, Mr. President, we think it's in the United States and Ukraine's best interest that you and the president of Ukraine have conversations and discuss the options that are out there. So absolutely, yes. But nowhere in any of that does Rick Perry say, yes, I told him to ask for an investigation of Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden. And interestingly, while he admits that he asked for Trump to bring up energy security and trade and things like that, I don't even remember that being a part of the conversation. So if Trump was just following Rick Perry's orders, which is laughable to begin with, he didn't follow them to the letter and instead decided to bring up a whole bunch of his favorite conspiracy theories. So look, Rick Perry deserves to be thrown out of the US government for any number of different reasons.
Hello.
First and foremost, because he's not remotely qualified for literally any position in an elementary school, let alone US government. But him being responsible for the launch of this inquiry, that's ridiculous.
I feel like I've said this before, but how often, like, the president owns himself. Like, neither one of these look good. You look like on what you're willing to say you're following orders
from Rick, Perry.
Rick Perry.
Yeah,
and like that's how you're trying to get out of this.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's not a defense. It's not a defense in a million different ways. But even if Rick Perry
still
told
did it.
Yeah,
you're the president. You're the boss. You're supposed to say no, bad idea, and hey, I'm worried about your thought process on things.
Exactly. Yeah, if let's say Rick Perry did ask you to do the call, which apparently he did, and let's say he did tell you to bring up Biden, which he totally didn't. Even if he did that, it's not on Rick Perry to decide whether to break the law or not.
Right. That's when
you
send
ignorant?
Out a tweet.
Is that,
that
the
says,
defense?
People have been telling me that I shouldn't have appointed Rick Perry. That's when.
And
the tweet
I'm throwing him out of the government because
exactly.
He's asking me to break the law.
Exactly, but we didn't get that.
But he doesn't do that. So look, I guess it seems laughable, but is this going to work?
No.
This isn't going to divert the attention to Rick Perry?
No.
He's trying really hard.
You know better.
No, of course he's not going to. No. Here's the thing. Like, I guess Rick Perry. Look, there's two measures here.
Okay.
For trying to get a scapegoat. One is how likely it is that they could actually be pinned as responsible for this. Mm-hmm. Rick Perry's low on that. How much does Trump like this person? He's also low on that.
Right.
Now, someone like Rudy Giuliani, he definitely has been involved in this since before we even knew about it. He's talked about in the call. He's been defending the president since then. Really high on that measure, but Trump also seems to like him. He's literally the only person in the world who does, but he does like him. William Barr also really high up on the first measure. He's talked about in the call. He's been working behind the scenes, and he should totally be facing an investigation of squashing the DOJ investigation
so
of this.
Both of the president's private defense attorneys you're mentioning there.
Exactly. Even though one totally should not be, and the other is and can be, but isn't a member of the US government, so
right.
Should not be doing diplomacy with Ukraine. But he likes those people, and he feels loyal to them. And so again, what can we learn from this? First of all, there's apparently no consequences outside of maybe for Donald Trump here. Rudy Giuliani seems to be so far skating without any consequences. William Barr isn't being investigated. That confounds me every day. But also, this is the 100th reminder that if you're a Republican who feels like, you know what, Trump will reward loyalty, no, he won't. He'll do it for a little while, maybe, but the second you're more useful sitting under a bus rather than standing by his side, he's going to launch you under that Greyhound. And that's what Rick Perry is learning right now. And apparently, it's going to push him out of the government because reporting came out, I believe, starting Friday, but over the weekend, that sometime this year he's going to be transitioning out of his position as Secretary of Energy, a position that I don't know that he's honestly done anything in. I don't think it's really going to matter when he leaves.
The jobs and it's so. I'm just reminded, bringing him up reminds me again of how ridiculous that appointment was.
But exactly.
What do you do?
Yeah, nobody understands it. Anyway, so that's the current update on what's going on the bus. If you are currently serving in the US government in some other position, maybe
Ben
Carson, wake up because he might be launching you next. I don't know, he seems really like him. But anyway, that's the current status. Okay, we're going to take another break. When we come back, Florida and guns, generally not a good combination, but in this particular case, really tragic things happen when you like just sort of walk around with a gun. We'll show you how after this. Everybody who buys a gun for self-defense imagines defending their home against some sort of invader, burglar, something like that. Others go farther and imagine that some sort of band of marauders are going to come and they're going to need heavy firepower to fight off multiple people. But all too often, what ends up happening is the person in the house with the gun shoots someone accidentally and it becomes a tragedy. And we have a case of that here. So let's talk about an incident in Florida where Christopher Bergen, who had just flown in from Norway Tuesday night to surprise Richard Dennis, his father-in-law, for his 62nd birthday. Authorities say poor timing and circumstance led to a horrible accident at Dennis's Gulf Breeze house when jumping out and surprising him for his birthday instead results in the surprise-y shooting him. And so Christopher Bergen ends up dead. And the Santa Rosa sheriff, Bob Johnson, says, you can't really say anything against Mr. Dennis for doing what he did. I think it was just a horrible accident that should never have happened.
You know what you can't say something horrible about?
What's that?
The gun.
Yes, so I agree it's a horrible accident that should never have happened. We just perhaps disagree about what would have led to it not happening.
Yeah.
So let's tell you a little bit about what had been happening before the shooting actually occurs, because it turns out pretty important in this case. So roughly 2 hours before Christopher Bergen appeared at the home, Dennis had been in a verbal altercation with another relative who had been banging on his front door. That relative eventually left, only to be replaced by Bergen, who didn't know anything about this, by the way, who delivered the same type of banging, this time on Dennis's back door around 11:30.
So wait.
Mm-hmm. You're starting to come to some of the conclusions that I did earlier.
Okay,
yes.
I'll wait.
So Dennis, armed with a gun now, opens the door, surprised by Bergen, who jumped out at him making a noise, immediately shot in his chest and died instantly. So now that we have the context, does the context make it better or worse? This guy living there, Dennis, had someone banging on his door, so now he answers the door that night with a gun. Because presumably the other relative was going to bust down the door and kill him with his bare hands, presumably.
He was afraid for his life and 911 was busy.
Exactly, so instead he is packed now for the rest of the night. If that had not been the case, Christopher Bergen wouldn't have died.
Yeah.
Maybe he would have gotten punched in the face. Maybe the shock to the 62-year-old, he would have lashed out, but the guy would still be alive. Instead, because he had a gun, he died. And that's the sort of thing that if I was the sheriff, I would probably factor into that. You can't really say anything against Mr. Dennis for doing what he did.
No, it's not responsible gun ownership. Like
not
you're
at all.
Just frivolously answering your door with a gun because someone annoys you.
Yeah.
And if you think that there is something outside of your door that you would need an actual deadly weapon for, you don't answer your door. You call the authorities.
Exactly. Unless what you want potentially is to shoot somebody.
Yeah, far too often. gun owners are irresponsible. Yeah. Like, not all of them, obviously, no one can ever say that. But a lot of the stories that we're talking about, a lot of the news stories, a lot of the issues that happen, whether it's a child that gets a hold of its parents' giant gun collection and takes it to school and kills people, or it's someone who was annoyed and frustrated and answered the door with a gun, or a young child shoots their sibling with a parent's gun. Now, it's just far too often. And the support for this is this like wild idea that if a mass murderer comes running in, everyone who owns a gun is a sharpshooter and just gonna take it. And it's just, this is absurd.
Exactly, it is. And look, I did something like this. Literally coming back from the same country, coming back from Norway, I surprised my girlfriend by showing up at her place a couple days early. She doesn't have a gun though, so I didn't get shot, which was nice. It made a much nicer reunion after a couple months away. And this isn't, he's not gonna face any charges, by the way. There was an Ohio mother who shot her 18-year-old daughter in the arm after she arrived home from college to surprise her. By the way, in America, we don't get to surprise each other anymore. Just bear that in mind. In that case, the Girard police chief said, if you realize someone has a gun for protection, they're not expecting you, announce yourself when you enter the home. Or even if you're just getting out to get a drink of water in the middle of the night, just announce yourself. Which, by the way, is a really fancy way of blaming the victim. From now on, it's like, I'm getting food. That's what you have to yell as you go through the house.
We're not gonna change gun laws. We're not gonna strengthen gun laws and make people, force people to be more responsible. We need you to better protect yourself from irresponsible gun owners. Like, that is so.
I agree. And this is just going out to the gun owners. Mm-hmm. If you can imagine, and you all did before you bought your gun, if you can imagine these scenarios where you have to defend your home, and you think about, what if somebody broke in and I couldn't defend myself? How horrible would that be? What if they injured one of my family members? How terrible would I feel? You can put yourself in that position and have some empathy for a potential future. Then put yourself in a far more likely, statistically far more likely situation where you shoot your daughter, or you shoot your son-in-law, or you shoot some other family member. Because I got news for you, that's not as fantastical, it's not in as many movies, but it's far more likely to actually happen. Put yourself in that position. Think about how you would feel if you gunned down a family member because you felt the need to carry your gun everywhere you go. Maybe give that a thought. Okay, very briefly, I wanna touch on something totally different in the news involving our colleague Anna Kasparian. So let's jump to that. Anna Kasparian was on CNN this weekend talking about the impeachment inquiry and how Biden has been responding to Trump's attacks against him. Let's take a look at a little bit of what Anna said.
I do agree that Donald Trump's attacks toward him have been effective. And I also agree that he needs to be much more aggressive in addressing them. One thing that keeps coming up is the whole notion of a conflict of interest. Biden using his political power in order to get his son these lucrative business deals or positions. But let's take a good hard look at the Trump administration and the nepotism that takes place there. Donald Trump has used his political power not only to encourage foreign leaders to meddle in our elections, but also to benefit himself and his family financially.
Okay, I agree with what she's saying there. He has so far, like, he begrudgingly eventually moved over to supporting impeachment. He didn't originally. He was one of the only presidential candidates who didn't initially, when all this stuff was coming out, support it. And even now, even though he's being continually attacked by Trump and Trump surrogates, he's not really responding forcefully.
He doesn't have to.
You don't think he has to?
No, he really hasn't had to do anything to garner any of the support.
Okay, yeah, that's true. I agree with that.
To. I think that sometimes, I think that him responding makes it look. Nothing. So here's the question that a lot of people, like, currently on the campaign trail are asking. All right, so you agree that nothing fishy happened here, but would you let your vice president's son do this? And everybody answers no. Mm-hmm. So, like, he should just not talk about it.
Yeah, look, pragmatically, I think that his lack of a strong response to Trump is bad for him. I don't really care about that because I don't want him to be the candidate. But that's consequential outside of just Joe Biden's candidacy. So if what Trump's defense is not really, I did nothing wrong. I mean, he keeps saying that, but we all know that what he did was wrong and what he did is impeachable. What he's trying to do, what all of his defenders are trying to do, is to muddy the waters and make it seem like, it's more complicated than it initially seemed. There's a bunch of bad people. They're all corrupt. What are you gonna do?
Which is why Biden can't say anything.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
But it's also why he kind of needs to, even if it means that it ends his presidential chances, because this is bigger than just one candidacy. The impeachment effort against Donald Trump rests on people understanding it. And Biden's weakness and effectively silence in a lot of cases. Yes, he's called him unhinged and stuff like that. He occasionally says something good. But if he's not going to respond in a strong way, it doesn't just hurt his candidacy. It undermines the actual impeachment effort because it makes it easier to cast this as a both sides whataboutism sort of thing. And that cannot be allowed. I know Joe Biden cares first and foremost about himself and his candidacy, but this is way bigger than that. So either go harder, find a way to do it, or step down and stop dragging down both the effort and the Democratic Party with your weakness.
I don't know if I would lay the president breaking the law on any other, on anybody else.
I'm not laying it on him. I'm saying that it will have an effect on the effort to get him impeached.
I just don't know if that's it, if that's anyone else's, if I agree that's someone else's responsibility, that the president broke the law and you have to throw yourself under the bus because I don't know if.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm trying to work it out. I don't know.
Okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I generally, I fall on the side of believing that I'm right.
Okay.
So I'm gonna stick with that right here.
Okay.
But anyway, great job by Anna on CNN giving a strong bit of advice to Joe Biden that he most likely won't either listen to or remember tomorrow. Anyway, thank you as always for being on the show on Monday. It's great to have you here. Thank you everybody for watching. Big week planned. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.